RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Bryce, good morning.
Good morning to you, Maisie, and what a ripping day of and weekend and longer weekend. There's so much sport going on at the moment, and the one that really caught my eye yesterday, of course, the Jockeys Trust cricket match.
Here we go.
Involved there, and the first time that the All-Stars have even got close to a sniff of victory, and came across the line and beat the Jockeys for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was a terrific day at Williamstown Oval, change of location, and boy, weren't we spoilt there. Beautiful weather, lovely sea breeze. The location is to die for, and the pavilion they have there and the function room up the top. Boy, if you're looking for someone to go and have a function and that sort of stuff, they've got big ideas for that game to grow even better next year. I was talking to one of the councillors there. And they're right behind it, as are the football and the cricket club there and everyone working together. A terrific day, and the Jockeys Trust raised over $120,000.
Wow. Fantastic.
It was a brilliant day, and that's what we were all there for, ultimately. Not our egos playing cricket, but although that was a bit hard to, cover that off on Fev. He was in everything. He was a wicketkeeper, and he said, "Oh, look, I've got to keep. I've got ADHD. If I don't keep, I'll be out of control." So he had the gloves, and he was that far involved in it that every time he took the ball, he wanted to take the bars off, even if they're standing in the stump. So he'd be throwing the ball at the stumps. We had to keep cleaning up this mess. It made for a very long game of cricket. But
square leg umpire would have been rather annoyed.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Dipper was fed up, I can assure you. Just going, "Cut it out, would you?" And he goes, "I can't help it." So, look, it was a terrific day and some great moments. But one of the big sporting moments, of course, was from the US yesterday. And The All-Star team were batting at the time that went into the extra time.
I was going to ask about this. Were you all sort of keeping
all
tabs?
Gathered? No, we're all gathered around a phone, and Gil McLaughlin was holding the largest screen that we had, and we had Fev there riding every bump. He's a Green Bay fan, not unlike us, Maisie, but he's second team in the Patriots. So I think that's just a lot of respect. It's pretty unusual to have the Patriots for any US person to as their second team.
No,
there wouldn't be anyone else's second team. But I think there's an enormous amount of respect for Bill Belichick and the coach and Tom Brady for what they've done over, the best part of two decades together. They've been absolutely amazing. And how many Super Bowls now is that for them, Maisie?
Well, they've now had 9 AFC championship wins, which is just ridiculous.
That's incredible. Yeah, they've just been amazing. And it was just, everyone just said, well, this is what they're going to do. And it just happened because we've seen it so many times. You know, there's a 2-minute drill here. They'll do that in 2 minutes remaining to get a score. And then obviously it was tied up a little later than that. But what a game. We're going to cover that off a little bit later on, of course.
We will. How's Gil's beard going?
Yeah, that's nice, big and bushy. His first day back at work was yesterday. And he
didn't shave it?
No, he didn't shave it. He was there. Right. He goes, "Oh, I'll knock it off after this." But look, he looks rested and relaxed.
He
said he's got a big 2 weeks away from the AFLW and then into the AFLX. So I didn't go into that with him and pass on your best wishes for the AFLX, Maisie. But
did you ask him about AFLX?
No, he
was excited about it. I'm not sure I can find anyone in Australia who is yet. Even Nat Fyfe yesterday, the captain of one of the teams, goes, "Yeah, I'll give it a crack, but if it's not for me, I won't play again." It's ridiculous.
It's not a screaming endorsement for the product, is it? Look, they're trying to do something that's probably a little unique, and it's probably not necessarily for the market of football here, the existing people. I think it's looking to develop something, find a game, run it with some players that are a bit more high profile, to then maybe introduced to new Australians and to other areas of the world, I suppose, is really what they're looking to do. So it's not necessarily for the market and the football lovers that are already ingrained at the moment. But look, the people there were fantastic. Archie Thompson
Who we're going to speak to a little later on. How did he go?
He was good. He was good. He was zipping around. He bowled with a few wheels, actually. He came in and I saw the long run and I wasn't sure what we were going to get. I had him down breeze, and there's a good breeze at Williamstown, so I had him down breeze. I thought that might just help him, and he just zipped him through. He got some good bounce. He was pretty good. He batted up at four. We had him up nice and high. He missed out. We're in a bit of trouble there early on. I think we're about five for about 28. So we're wondering what sort of score we got. But I know this will make a lot of people cringe, but it was Nick Quinn who went out there and...
You're kidding.
No, it was Nick Quinn who went out there probably in about... No. I think it was about the sixth or seventh over. But he batted all the way through to the 20th over and got 20 not out.
Oh, no.
He was swinging and missing and trying to hit him and blapping them all over the place. It was like he had a rolled-up newspaper he was batting with. And, it was a lot of fun. He kept apologising. We had a little power play in the middle where – who went out there for us? We had Stevie Payne went out and batted with us, and Priscilla as well went out and batted a power play. So they couldn't go out for two overs, and whatever runs they could get in that time was added to the score. So we ended up with 22 overs. So he came off and just spent the whole two overs. He was batting at the time, so he retires off. We go and play a power play. Then he comes back on after that, and he was apologising to everyone, saying, "I'm trying so hard to hit the ball. I miss it. It's a thick edge here," and just goes to the field. But look, he gave his all and was the only batsman in our team to retire. So,
well, there you go.
Ollie was outstanding again. He had 20 not out.
Who?
Brenton Abdullah.
Is he the best cricketer?
He's outstanding. He's right. Good. Yeah. Well, fortunately, we got early wickets as well. The wicket, look, it played beautifully. The conditions are great, but a few leading edges by the jockeys. Obviously, all the practice they've been doing, going across the line, and a few catches went up and some great catches been taken.
Do you reckon Brenton Abdullah has done a bit of work in the nets as well? Or does he just come in fresh and is a gun?
Well, last year Peter Bedford was playing, and he said, "I used to coach him as a junior. He could have gone on and made a career out of cricket."
Really?
That's where he is. But it's only this time of the year that he has maybe like they call it a training session. I'm sure it's just the jockeys catch up and then
a couple of beers.
Take the top off a few. He is a terrific player.
Yeah, well.
He's into the spirit of it all, and he's good fun as well. They all are, everyone. It's just a great day. It really is.
Did you get to have a bowl?
I bowled a couple of overs and saved myself for the last over. They needed, I think it was about 17 off the last over in the end. It was Danny O'Brien who bowled the second last over, which is the one that really clinched it. So that's what you do. They're your go-to bowlers, the second last over. So that was Danny O'Brien up into the breeze, and he bowled a terrific over then.
Fair effort by Danny. Fair effort by the All-Stars. Yes, they get the job done over the Jockeys 11. So your captaincy obviously coming to the fore yesterday.
It was like herding cats there for a while. We ended up with a couple of extra fielders.
How many on the field? Yeah,
we ended up with an extra fielder there, and I think the jockeys, and I didn't realise, I had to keep counting, because I don't know how hard it is. And I just said to the players, look, you've just got to keep rotating on and off. If you've been on for a while, just go and grab someone off. And can you guys manage that? Because that's a hard thing to do when you're trying to work out who's bowling next and setting a field and all that sort of stuff. And they said, yeah, no worries. But then I think there were a few overs, and Walks came out and was sort of going, hey, and he's having a whisper to the umpires. I'm going, what's going on here? And then he came past me and he goes, you've got 12 on the field, mate. Come on, you've had it for three overs. And I'm like, oh, sorry. But, yeah, so we did those, fix it up.
You need one of those interchange stewards from the AFL.
I know. So there's a bit of a red flag for us there. They should have, is that what they used to do? Wave a flag or something like that?
Yeah, they did. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they waved the flag.
That was unbelievable.
So, yeah, so there should have been a bit of that. But it didn't impact on the game, which I'm happy to say it wasn't done in any bad spirits or anything like that. It was just one of those things.
Bryce McGain cheating his way to victory yesterday with the All-Stars over the Jockeys. You're not quite Maria Sharapova take a 15-minute toilet break just to halt the momentum type cheating, but just a little sneaky by you for a couple of overs.
Oh, no, completely unintentional, and the jockeys would know that.
So the NFL yesterday, we touched on it briefly, and we'll talk a little bit more when we head to Boston after about a quarter past seven this morning. That was just unbelievable. Could you get two better? It's like having two preliminary finals in the AFL decided by a point. It was incredible drama.
Well, the tension that we were feeling just in our batting tent was enough. And, you know, we were just imagining what it was like, of course, the whole of Boston behind and Kansas City. And, you know, they certainly deserved. And they've got a young up-and-coming quarterback and enormous amount of respect for the way he played. And, look, it's just a terrific game. And if you're not into the US sports, well, you're missing out, because this is when it becomes so thrilling. It's the best time of year, sporting January, all the things going on. You know, I think we're pretty privileged to be behind the mic here and just bring it all to everyone. It's a great time of year.
I never used to be into US sport until about 4 or 5 years ago, when I went to the NFL for the first time. And was lucky enough to go to New York for a couple of weeks, and was off to, I said to myself about 2 years before I'd planned this trip, I want to learn the game so that when I go over, I'm not just one of those people who's going, not understanding what's going on and sitting amongst 80,000 people asking questions all game, because that bloody annoys me at Aussie Rules games. but I wanted to be one of those people who actually knew what was going on, and made sure I watched as much of it as I could in the 2 years leading up, and to learn the game and the nuances. And when you know it, and when you actually, I think you can follow it a little bit, a lot easier than you used to be able to, because of the access that we've got in terms of ESPN now, showing lots of games, and then with our breakfast hours too, we're very lucky that it's right in the NFL hotspot. It's a fantastic game, and I think you appreciate it a lot more. It's like anything. It's like Test cricket. If you're brought up on Test cricket, you understand the nuances and you appreciate it a lot more. And I think the same goes for NFL as well.
No doubt about that. I really got into it by playing the game.
Madden.
The Madden. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So going through the years and playing that and understanding all the different plays they would do and reading up on it and studying that, and then obviously then watching it going, well, they're doing those things, they're doing that. And as I mentioned before, Bill Belichick, who amazing coach, he pulls out these old formations all of a sudden. Like, they'll have two defensive linemen and a number of these other, and they're just, and other teams go, what on earth are they doing here? Yeah. Like, they've always got a trick up their sleeve, and they always, and very rarely when they try those things does it not work.
Yep.
It just seems to work, and they just have a whole lot of confidence in what they do, and they're probably man for man not as good as, you know, probably the next 8 teams, but the system that they run and the belief they have in their coach and their quarterback is phenomenal. And a number of these players play, they're not playing above themselves, they're playing in this system that makes them shine.
I was talking to a few friends yesterday who aren't like rusted on Aussie Rules supporters. They have a team and don't follow it particularly closely, but And they'd go to a final if it was on, and then if they're lucky enough to snare grand final tickets, they'd go. But they said they'd rather go to the Super Bowl than an AFL grand final.
Wow. Well, I suppose it's the travel and all that. Are they going to go to the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks' time?
No. Well, they were Saints fans. So I dare say they may have been tempted.
Burned. But, yeah. Oh, this. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans. Yeah. Saints. Okay. Oh, I thought you meant like Saints fans. No. Here. They're just kind of, no wonder they're burnt and crisped and feeling a bit off put by the grand final experience. Yeah.
It was a hard day for Saints fans yesterday. So I think that's an interesting little quirk where, the AFL Grand Final, we think of it as this huge event, but then the Super Bowl just takes it to another level altogether. Craig Gabriel joins us, as he does every day throughout the Australian Open. Craig, good morning.
Morning, guys.
You sprang in a little bit more this morning. Can you see the finish line?
No, I can't see anything at the moment. I really can't.
A couple of coffees, hopefully, might.
You know, the thing is, coffee has no effect on me.
Me either.
I can have a coffee and go to sleep within 2 minutes.
So can I. Are you a coffee man, Bryce?
Yeah, not a lot. I used to drink a lot of coffee, and I used to go through the highs and lows all day. And
did you?
I used to. It does affect me.
So when
me.
You drink coffee, you're up and about and bang, on.
Yeah, but then I really hit low as well. So I might be mentally exhausted, but then I can't sleep. So anything, if I have a coffee after 5 o'clock or something like that. No,
really?
Dreadful. Even that night at 10 o'clock at night. So it really does muck me around. So I try and leave it. Maybe just a social coffee in the morning, something like that. But I used to be through the highs and lows of it.
I love my George Clooney coffee.
Oh, do you? The Nespresso.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I actually have a pod machine at home myself. It's very handy. Very handy. Let's start with one of the classic women's games last night. Simona Halep and Serena Williams. 6-1, 4-6, 6-4. But that doesn't really tell the tale of the tape, Craig. What an incredible night of women's tennis on Rod Laver Arena.
It was really a wonderful match, and I thought this was going to be an absolute blowout after the first set. After the first game, I thought, oh, this is going to be competitive when Williams was broken. Then when she wins six games in a row to close out that first set, I thought, oh, my goodness. I mean, seriously, this is over and done with.
Yeah.
And then it gets tight. And we saw some great shot making from both women, and it was a fantastic finish to that match. It really was.
Worthy of a final?
Oh, well, yeah. You know, when you look at the two names that were across the net from one another and the standard of tennis that was played, yeah, I think that would have been worthy of a final.
Yeah, so Serena Williams threw in three sets. I know she dropped the set in the middle, and there were patches of inconsistency throughout the game from Serena, but how well is she tracking at this point of the tournament? Would she be happy with where she's at?
I think she'd be okay, but knowing what she's like, nothing is good for her. She could be playing out of the universe, and it still wouldn't be good enough for her. She is beyond being a perfectionist. So, things would have made her happy, but there would have been things that she wouldn't have been happy about, like losing her serve in the first game.
Mm.
Those sort of things.
Yeah, so, even in the second set, she went up a break early, and then
exactly
right back into things. Yep. So, three set win there for Serena Williams last night. The later game too, in case you're just waking up this morning on the men's side of things, Novak Djokovic won in four sets, 6-4, 6-7, 6-2, 6-3 over Daniel Medvedev. What did we learn about Novak last night? Is he on top of his game like we saw in the back 6 months of last year?
I think he's not quite at that level, but he's getting there, and he's doing what's necessary to get through these matches. I mean, I didn't expect him to necessarily lose a set against Denis Shapovalov in the previous round, but then look how he answered that with the fourth set, 6-blotch. I think he'd be okay with his performance, but when you get to this point of the tournament, this is when you got to start peaking. And I think he will do that against Kei Nishikori.
Out of, Federer's obviously gone now, but out of those three, who's playing the best tennis, Djokovic or Nadal at this point of the tournament?
I think probably Nadal has been a little bit more impressive. He hasn't dropped a set, from what I remember, whereas Novak now has dropped a set. You'd have to say Nadal is a bit more impressive. I mean, in the way he handled Tomáš Berdych, those first two sets of love and one, that was solid.
Yeah, no, incredible performance last time out. Let's head to one of the big moments of yesterday. Kei Nishikori took Pablo Carreño Busta to five sets. Got a little bit tense at the end. Carreño Busta was up 8-5. So in the old tiebreak system,
He would have won the match.
Unfortunately, he lost the next 5 points and lost 10-8 in the tiebreak. And then this blow-up happened. Have a listen to Pablo Carreño Busta. Or have we got the audio there? No, we do. Nishikori winning and then, Carreño Busta blowing up here.
Well, he wins five in a row, Leighton.
Oh, what a comeback. How happy his camp is.
And 5-4, Carreño Busta was furious at that match. He had a chat with the chair umpire for quite some time at 8-5, and you can see him. He's thrown his bag across the court, picks it up, and he is still yelling at the chair umpire.
Something set him off at 8-5. He was up in that match tiebreak, and he didn't win another point after the disagreement with the umpire.
Audio there, courtesy of Channel 9. So he picked up his bag, turfed it across the court, picked it up, started storming off the court, turned around and gave the umpire a serve on the way out. It was an incredible performance,
so
even after the game.
Where would that have featured if it was Nick Kyrgios?
Oh, I know.
Yeah?
You're telling me. I'm with you. where it would be back page, front page news.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And where would we probably get to?
About four pages in.
Yeah. And where would we have been if the racket obliteration of Alexander Zverev was Nick Kyrgios?
Well, the thing wouldn't break. That was the most difficult thing. He bashed it five times on one side and bashed it again. It was unbreakable racket. He eventually got there in the end.
But the other classic was Lucas Puig. Lucas Puig smashed his racket. And the thing was, like, contorted somehow. He's picked it up and then bent the head of the racket into, you know, almost like a folding book or something. Oh, the classics.
So why did he – have we seen these blowups before from Carino Busta? Is he a fiery character?
No, not that I can remember.
Where did that come from?
It beats me. I have to admit, because I was concentrating on what was happening on Rod Laver Arena, I didn't see it happen when it happened. But normally, he's a relatively mild guy.
Yeah,
normally.
Yeah.
Is it just genuine frustration to the rule change and how it's different everywhere? And, you know, he'd technically won a match in any other...
He's not Katie Bolter, who thought she had won the match and started celebrating.
Oh, that's right. That was another one, yeah. There's been some good moments, hasn't there?
No, it's provided plenty of moments. But, yeah, that was an incredible blow-up. Kaini Shikori, talk to us about him. He's the number 8 seed, loves a five-setter, small in stature. Michael Chang's a coach, or one of his coaches. And a great story for Japanese tennis, but he now finds himself in the quarterfinals again. He seems to like the Australian Open.
Yeah, look, the hard court events he likes. Mm. He does well at those. What is that? 1, 2, 3 five setters in four matches. We were talking about Roberto Bautista Agut with his back-to-back five setters after being up 2 sets to love. I mean, I think that award of you know, the ever-ready person should be, the Duracell person should be going to Kei Nishikori.
5 hours and 5 minutes it went for that match.
I mean, you've got to give it to him. You know, this is incredible, that the fitness and the mental stamina to get through those matches.
Yep. A little bit of another upset too with, the other two matches yesterday were upsets. Lucas Puig beating the 11th seed Corner Courage, and also Milos Raonic defeating the number 4 seed Alex Zverev. Before we get on to Zverev's meltdown, Lucas Puig, tell us a bit about him. He's inside the top 30, a Frenchman, but we don't know a hell of a lot about him.
Solid player. He's been an important part of the French Davis Cup team, especially 2017 when he scored the winning point to give France the cup. So he's now working with Amélie Mauresmo. Amélie Mauresmo jumped ship because she had been appointed and accepted the role of Davis Cup captain for France.
Mm.
He approached her. And she said, "Okay, I'll go with Luca."
She maybe gave up. Pays better.
Yeah, maybe. I gave that up. Look, just a nice French player to watch. You know, they've got such beautiful strokes and such flair. So just one of those sorts of players. Just, you know, not the consistent. He's been up, I think, inside the top 20 as well, but just inside the top 30 now. So a bit up and down on occasions.
We saw the meltdown from Alexander Zverev yesterday as Milos Raonic took him to the clean, especially in the first two sets, 6-1, 6-1, 7-6 in the third. Milos Raonic through to a quarterfinal again at the Australian Open, and Alexander Zverev, more importantly probably for him, out again at a Grand Slam, probably earlier than he'd expected. What goes wrong at Grand Slams with Alexander Zverev?
He just played crap yesterday.
Yeah.
Those first two sets, I couldn't believe. Look, it's no disgrace to lose to Milos Raonic, but the way he lost with those first two sets, that was an embarrassment.
Was he getting played off the court, or was it just unforced errors and making a meal of it all?
It was all of the above, really. Yeah. And Raonic just continued on his own way, not uttering boo to anybody, and just kept on slamming down bombs on the court. And Zverev just couldn't handle it. You saw something negative happening from the very early stages of this match. He was starting to get a bit antsy early on. And, you know, I guess it just got to him with that racket smash. But also, I was watching Ivan. Landl, Yvonne never shows any sort of emotion. She's got the same face if the guy has just won Wimbledon or the same face if he's just lost first round in the 250. But he actually stood up on a couple of occasions, I think maybe trying to get Zverev's attention, not to coach him or anything like that, but to give him the warning. Right. So, yeah, I hadn't seen Yvonne get up. Even the days of Andy Murray, I never saw him stand up.
No, I can't recall that either. For Zverev, how does he overcome this now in slams? Because surely, I know he's only young, but that must start playing on his mind as well, come the big tournaments.
You'd think so. You'd think it's going to start
playing. He's done everything but the slams, yeah, really.
Exactly. Won the year-end championships
as
well. With the majors, very good. But he's only reached the quarters of a major once, last year.
Mm.
So he needs, I don't know what it is really with him. He just seems to get a bit of a mental block once he gets into a couple of rounds, but then there's always a bit of an excuse. No, he played well. Oh, no, I was injured. Oh, I was struggling to do this. Get all that out of your system.
Yeah. And also, when he lost his serve, I've never seen anyone lose their serve so significantly like that, too. Three double faults in a row. That's why the racket ended up in about 14 pieces.
There was a cameraman nearby. And I think he could hear there's some noise going on. He got a shock when he turned around.
It was one of those handheld cameras. Yeah. So they sort of hold it like a suitcase and get that low shot. Jeez, he was brave. He was about 2 meters from him.
That was a classic racket break. It reminded me so much of the Marcus Bagdatis one from a few years ago. It was priceless.
It was.
I wanted that racket for my collection.
Now, who was it? There was someone it might have been in the first week of the Australian Open, who smashed the racket and then gave it to a kid. And the kid in the front, this kid's got this smash racket that you're never going to be able to use. I've never seen a bigger smile or celebration from the kid. He absolutely loved it.
At one of my houses, I used to have all the walls in the garage covered in smash rackets, tennis rackets from players.
That's actually very good. Yeah. That's a good memento.
That is.
Yeah. That is. A couple of the other results from yesterday on the women's side of things. Svitolina over Keys, Osaka over Sevastova, and Pliskova over Muguruza. All the higher seeds there winning and getting through. Yeah. So no real upsets there. Can any of those do some damage, especially probably Naomi Osaka, who's got the big game when she needs it, maybe deeper in the tournament? How far can she go this Australian Open?
Well,
dropped a set again yesterday.
Yeah. She tends to win every time she wins the first set. But to do that after losing the first set, that's strong. That's good. To regroup and come back and win that. I was calling some of that match on Australian Open radio. It was a bit of a dire match. You know, it was tough to keep concentrated on that match, but she's gotten through it. And against Svitolina, I would go with her to win. Mm-hmm. That Svitolina match was dire as well, for goodness sake. You know, sometimes you hope these matches are going to be good, and then you think, why aren't they not on court 17?
That was with Keys. The score there, of course, 6-2, 6-1. 1-6. Sorry, I mucked that up a bit there, but Svitolina 6-2.
1-6, 6-1.
Yeah, lost that second set. And is that what you're saying, that it was just a whole lot of errors that caused those things? And
it was just
breaks of serve.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But it was just a boring match.
Yeah.
It really was.
Time to the UK with Russell Milton. Another big Premier League weekend has taken place, and Russ is all over it for us in London. Russell, good morning.
Good morning, Maisie. Good morning, Bryce. How are you two?
Terrific, Russ. Now, I might start, if you'll excuse me, just with a bit of red bias here. As Manchester United, we racked up another win over the weekend over Brighton. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this has to be the best ever start to a manager in the Premier League. I can't think of anyone who's started so well.
That's very good. I mean, it was a good time to take over from Jose, wasn't it? You know, the club was probably at an all-time low. They had a great set of fixtures coming up. They played Tottenham away, which is a great result, 1-0, wasn't it? But the rest of them, you would have to say, yes, they should win these. And they won 2-1 at the weekend, penalty. And Marcus Rashford, who's playing ever so well, he's really got a tune out of the players. And
Oh, I reckon.
And he pulled Pogba down tools. You know, Marcus Rashford is looking the player that we all thought he was. So that's 6 wins in a row for Man United and looking good on 44 points, just level with Arsenal now.
Yeah, that gap that's closed as well, because Jose Mourinho earlier in the year said Champions League football, well, they don't even need to worry about Europe next year. It was unattainable. Are they thinking about that now, considering they're only 3 points off fourth?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at the Champions League, there's, you know, Liverpool and Man City are away. I think Tottenham may come into a little bit of a wall because they've lost Harry Kane.
Yep.
They've lost Son, the Korean, and they've also could lose Dele Alli, who went off with an injury yesterday. So, you know, Chelsea's form is very patchy. Arsenal, they're liable to slip up at any time. United are looking really good, and, you know, it's 2 from 4, really, for me to get in the Champions League. And as you said, they were 7 points behind Arsenal 6 games ago, and now, you know, they're right on their tails. They went above them at the weekend on Saturday. Arsenal, you know, beat Chelsea, which was a great result to get back there. So it's really good for United fans. They're really enjoying it. I know, you know, I've got a load of United mates, and they're loving it there. I know one of the coaches at United, and he said it's a totally different place to what it was, you know, literally a month ago. And everybody's smiling, everybody's playing well. There's confidence now, you know, for the whole club, right down to the tea lady. And, you know, it's only going to look good. And, you know, all he's done is put smiles on faces and said, go out and perform, lads, I think, and they look good.
We all like that environment, no matter what we're doing, whether it's playing EPL football or on the tools out in the work site. We all like that, having a smile on our face. A result that you'd be happy for me to just bring you back towards, Arsenal and Chelsea. That was an important one for the EPL.
Massive, yeah. Arsenal have been very patchy. They went on that great run, and then they've, you know, been up and down for a little bit. He's getting a lot of stick at the minute. You know, there's a lot of questions on him about the type of player he's playing in positions. He's playing Kante out of position, who's one of the best players last year. Hazard doesn't look the same. They're lacking a centre-forward, and they're lacking a bit of intensity. Then he comes out and says that his players lack motivation. You know, that doesn't go down too well, I think. But great win for Arsenal, 2-0. They got straight out the traps. Scored two decent goals. Lacazette was a fantastic goal. And one thing Arsenal do have going for them is their forwards in Lacazette and Aubameyang are two that would grace any Premier League side, you know, any side in world football. So that's always their Achilles heel, was always going to be at the back. But a great win for Arsenal, 2-0. Don't have much success, or haven't had much success against the top sides in recent years. So that was a good one for Arsenal fans to win and to get within 3 points of Chelsea.
And Russell, what about Tottenham? They would have had their heart in their mouth there. They were down 1-0 for a fair part of the game. Took a second half equaliser, and Harry Winks in the 93rd minute finally got them the win over Fulham.
Well, Fulham probably deserves something here. As you said, Bryce, yeah, 93rd minute, Harry Winks doesn't score many. Popped up, Dele Alli scored in early second half to get them level on terms, and then he went off injured. So yeah, Tottenham got through this one because they'd lost 2 of the last 3 and at home, so it was good for them to, you know, it was a game you'd expect Tottenham to win, the Fulham away, but Fulham were very good. Probably did deserve something. I think Claudio Ranieri, the Fulham manager, will take something from it, although that's 3 defeats in a row for them. But Tottenham, yeah, it was a massive win, and I think, you know, Pochettino will be taking everything he can now to get themselves into the, or keep themselves in the Champions League places. They've got some big matches coming up, Tottenham. You know, they've got the semi-final against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup coming up on Thursday our time. They've got Dortmund in the Champions League, so it'll be open to get a few players back to keep confidence and keep their positions as high as they can.
Winks always wins. Winks always wins. We should know that by now. Now, Russ, I want to ask about a follow here for us in Australia, which has been Huddersfield, of course, Aaron Moy's side.
Yeah.
He's out injured at the moment, of course, not in the Asian Cup, but they've appointed a new manager from Borussia Dortmund. So something a little bit of left of centre there.
Yeah, Jan Sievert is 36 years old. Yeah, no, not many people have heard of him. He's doing the Dortmund under-23s, and he's been, you know, doing this assisting there as well. I think he's been on their radar for a few years now. Probably David Wagner, you know, the type of guy he is, who just got sacked by Huddersfield, you know, mentioned him as well to him and said, you know, go and get this guy.
Time to head overseas now and catch up with Eric Wilber from Boston.com on the unbelievable win by the Patriots yesterday. Tom Brady has done it again. Eric, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning to you guys. How you doing?
We're very well. Now, in Boston yesterday, how were the celebrations? Another Super Bowl. Are you getting sick of them?
You know, it's funny because we're not. No. From a journalist perspective, the toughest part about this time of year is finding more stuff to write about, right? Because you've got these 2 weeks where we've got to write every single day about previewing the Super Bowl, what are the Patriots going to do this time, blah, blah, blah. And it never fails that something else happens with this team, though. You know, I mean, this time it's about the fact that no one really thought the Patriots were going to get here, at least from a national standpoint in America. A lot of people thought the Patriots were too old. Tom Brady didn't have it anymore, didn't have the right receivers. The defense wasn't good. And they've used that. They've really used that to their advantage and taking it and putting a big chip on their shoulder and saying, yep, no one thinks we can do it, so we're going to go out there and show the world exactly what can get done. I mean, we should have known. We should have known after they had an up-and-down season that things are going drastically bad in December, losing to the Miami Dolphins, losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers. It doesn't matter. As soon as that calendar turns to January, the Patriots are going to be the Patriots. They're going to be the Patriots. Always, every single year. And we just might as well accept it.
It's quite an amazing franchise and what they've been able to do. 10 years ago, they were writing books about, and two volumes of books saying, you know, this is just once in a lifetime in what they've done there. This has gone on for another decade. This is just something unbelievable, Eric. Do the public really appreciate what they have on their hands there? Because this is, it hasn't happened before, and as sure as hell not going to happen in the future. I can't imagine it.
I mean, I hope we appreciate it. I certainly do from the perspective of, you know, watching my kids enjoy it and knowing that when I was their age, you know, we had Larry Bird, and that was about it. You know, we had this big stretch of where sports were not huge in Boston as from a winning perspective. You know, I was writing this morning, and I said, you know, the fact that Brady's going to face the Rams again 17 years after the first time he beat them in the Super Bowl. And I was like, 17 years? It's just astounding that that sort of stretch has gone on between the time that Brady has faced this team in the big game, two cities. You know, when he faced them last time, they're in St. Louis. Now they're in Los Angeles, back in Los Angeles. So it's just those sorts of things, and just putting those sorts of things in perspective, realizing how long this has been. And, you know, it really is a tale of two dynasties. There was the first dynasty where the Patriots won 3 out of 4 Super Bowls. Then they went into a lull. They lost to the Giants twice in a big game. Brady wasn't exactly Tom Brady. And I think what happened in the long run was that Jimmy Garoppolo was drafted by the Patriots as a backup QB, younger kid, threatening to take Brady's job. And it really lit something in Tom Brady that Brady became better in his late 30s. He became better in his late 40s. And it really started his whole health movement and physical fitness regimen. And what it has delivered is just, you know, what we've seen over the last 3 years and three straight Super Bowls once again.
Yeah, we've got a great insight into that through a couple of documentaries that we've seen as well on Facebook. That Tom versus Time was just sensational to watch to take you inside what he goes through in terms of his preparation. His emotion after yesterday's win seemed heightened. If he won Super Bowl this time round, would this be the most special?
I don't know. That's tough to say You know, I'm not sure about what the health of his family is right now. But 2 years ago, when they won, you know, came the 28-3 comeback over the Atlanta Falcons, that was a big time for Tom. In that his mother was going through remission for cancer, and nobody really knew what was going on with him. And during that whole stretch, this whole time, you know, I'm not sure if I think everything's fine. But I think right now it's just a matter of that. He's 41 years old, and he doesn't have many of these left. And this time in particular, everyone was doubting them. And he's really kind of, I think, you know, regaling, loving this moment in that he can still do it at age 41. In that he wants to play till 45. That may seem low at this point. Who knows? You know, anything's on the table right now. But, yeah, Brady's emotions last night, I think because the game was so big. And it also represented the future and the past of the NFL, right? We've got the best of all time in Tom Brady going up against Pat Mahomes, who proved in that game he's going to win one or two or three or four Super Bowls. Yep. You know, when all things are said and done, the kid is a super talent. So, you know, I think that whole thing, seeing that the fact that, you know, Brady's not on his way out, but he's seeing the future. And the future is now, and hey, Brady's still now, too. So I think that whole well of emotions and the fact that he was able to get past that probably meant a lot to him in the long run.
And we're to understand that after the game, he went into the locker room and the two quarterbacks caught up, and Tom Brady, out of a absolute respect for his counterpart, spent some time with him and really acknowledged what a star he's going to be in the future.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good moment because, you know, Mahomes really was fantastic in that game. And the fact that he was able to come back and they were able to figure things out and they were that close to beating the Patriots. You know, just look, for a lot of these guys that do so well during the regular season, especially at that young an age, and then they hit the postseason and they just turtle. You know, something happens and they just get really uptight and frightened and scared. And Mahomes didn't do that last night. You know, if anything, he came out in the moment and he shined better than ever when they came down from that halftime locker room down 14-0. Really good performance by that kid that bodes really well for Kansas City and their future.
So the Patriots play the Rams now after their amazing win with that field goal yesterday in overtime against the Saints. A bit of an upset. What happens in Boston? We talk about the Super Bowl build up in the cities themselves, but what about in Boston when the team is on the road to Super Bowl? Describe those 2 weeks for us. I'm sure you're probably getting used to it now as well.
Yeah, we do get kind of used to it. It's almost like we look at what other cities do, and we say, no, that's not the way to do it. This is the way you're supposed to handle Super Bowl. It's weird. You know, this is the ninth with Tom Brady. This is the you know, the 11th Super Bowl in all for the New England Patriots franchise, which is like, what, a fifth of them all in general. So it's pretty remarkable, just the fact that this Patriots franchise, you know, I was talking to my kids last night, and it was funny, he was watching the celebration in the locker room live on Twitter. Mm. And I was rolling my eyes to my wife, and I was saying, yeah, this is just like we used to do when we were kids, right? And just the complete change of the way to be a fan is. And, you know, when I was his age, we couldn't watch the, I grew up literally 20 miles away from where the Patriots played. We could not watch them on TV because no one was buying tickets. You could not see the games. And then there's the whole thing, you know, the Patriots are going to move to St. Louis. They're going to move to Hartford, Connecticut. They're going to move to Florida or L.A. or who knows where they were going to go. And nobody around here really cared because they were so bad and had a history of just being so awful. And it's tough to get that kind of to tell people about that now because we're sitting here with 25 years of the craft and just the success after success after success that the old losing days of the Patriots seem like so long ago. And for those that experienced that, though, and to have this feeling now, like I said, 17 years in between Super Bowls, it really is a special feeling, and I think those are the ones that you really tend to appreciate.
Nick Mayer. Matty Ryan gets a really strong hand to that one, and that could be the key save in this shootout. It's Australia's to win now, thanks to their Premier League shot stopper, who has come up with two massive saves.
Yeah, Mark Schwartz-Resk last night in the penalty shootout. Two huge saves for Matty Ryan. A great effort as the Aussies went all the way to penalties with Uzbekistan and prevailed 4-2. To chat about that, Archie Thompson joins us on the line this morning. Socceroos and Melbourne Victory legend. Good morning, Arch.
Morning, mate. How are we?
Now, should we be introducing you as footballing superstar or fast bowler in the National Jockeys cricket game yesterday? That was Bryce McGann, your captain here, is telling me you bowled with some serious heat.
Mate, I was lucky to push past medium pace, to be honest. But the one down that bloody line to bowl that, but it was good fun, mate, great cause, so had a great day.
Fantastic. Now, the Socceroos straight through on penalties. It took a little while. 4-2, Matty Ryan, he's really making his mark as one of our great goalkeepers. He's played a lot of football for Australia, and you kind of forget he's still only sort of 26, 27 years of age.
Yeah, well, look, he's obviously doing so well in the Premier League. He's been behind the well between the sticks for the national team for as long as I can remember. And I actually think that he's a lot older than what his age is. I think it's because of his experience, the confidence he shows when he's out there. That's the reason why he's number one and why he's doing so well. And, you know, I had no questions, actually. I had no questions that he would have some say in that penalty shootout because I was confident of the players that were stepping up, but he was just a superstar last night.
Yeah, certainly the good players rise to the top, and he did that today. How have you pulled up, Archie, very quickly about the cricket game? You've pulled up okay, no sore muscles?
Funny enough, but yes, I am sore. And yeah. The funny thing is that I was only on the crease batting for two runs, so I faced two balls and I was out. And then I'm a little bit sore because I was kind of covering for a lot of the old fellas out in the field. So they asked me to come over here and back up me or get in behind there. And so I was a bit of a laugh last night, yesterday, but it was good fun.
Archie, you were everywhere in the field, and I appreciate your efforts. Well done. And you can throw as well, so it was much appreciated.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
But more importantly, the Socceroos, that they move on in the Asian Cup, which is a good sign. But their first half was a bit lackluster, but a much improved second half had them controlling the game, but still can't get a score.
Yeah, well, look, I think Uzbekistan were great that first half. And technically, all those players watching them were really skillful. I felt the second half that we started to dominate a little bit more, and they didn't have too much options up front. We pressured really high. I felt like we were going to score in that sort of normal time, but it didn't eventuate. But, you know, it went to extra time, and anything can happen in extra time and penalty shootout. But, you know, that's the experience. And I don't know the result of the next game that we were sort of depending on. I know that we were hoping that maybe it might have, well, it looks like we're going to be playing
the UAE.
So, I mean, we're going to have to be better. I know that, you know, when you progress through tournaments like this, obviously the opposition's got to be a little bit tougher come sort of, you know, the sort of money end of the tournament. And we need to improve. We need to keep improving. I see massive improvements already from, you know, when we lost to Jordan to where we are now. I thought Tommy Rogic was outstanding. He's looking the biz at the moment. And with Leckie coming on, in the sort of 30 minutes to come in that normal time and play another sort of 20 minutes on top of that, that's good signs because I thought he made an immediate impact when he came on.
Yeah.
Then we've got, if anything, I would like to probably see the top end change a little bit. Maybe with McLaren playing more of an impact role because I think the boy that came on, for the life of me, I can't pronounce his name, but I thought he was quite good too and gives something different. So we're going to have to obviously pick up, recover well, and I know it's not easy after recovering after 120 minutes of football, and it's more the adrenaline than really the body. So I think they'll recoup well and know what exactly they need to do for the UAE game.
Last time we played a pink ball game, you scored 100, which is nice. I spent some time out there with Smithy, and as I mentioned, it's probably somewhere with New South Wales we don't have a lot of success. But that last pink ball game, you know, we did have Josh Hazlewood and Mitch Stark who ran through them, but we played some really good cricket and we had a win. So my last taste of the Gabba was some success. It was some success, so hopefully it continues this week.
Curtis Patterson there yesterday after being called up into the Australian Test squad. Bryce, I didn't know that we could add to the Test squad at the last minute, but apparently the selectors have made that decision off the back of 200s for Curtis Patterson.
Look, I don't mind it. When you're picking players who are in form, he's gone back-to-back hundreds in a game against the opposition that they'll be playing up in the Gabba. In the pink ball, it's unique. He's in white-hot form. Why not? And I'm okay with it. I think the issue is nominating these Test squads weeks before and with games in between. They did that with the Test squad going into India and there were still Shield games to go. Like, let's have a look at all the form and it's fine. Nominate it later on.
Yeah.
But I think it's the timing of announcing the squads, but I think they've got this one right.
Do you think you'll play?
Absolutely. You're not getting added to a squad. You're not going up there to cover and do anything like that. They've got no injuries up there, so no batsmen who are injured. They've got a plethora of batsmen, and now they've just cast their eye over. The chairman on, the selector on duty would have gone, well, hang on a minute. Curtis Patterson has really made it. I saw him make 100 earlier in the year against Victoria at the MCG. Part of the criticism for Curtis Patterson is no doubting he's a very stylish cricketer. He's a left-hander, very, very good player. No question. But the criticism has been that he hasn't been able to convert his 50s into big scores, and he's done that a lot for the last couple of seasons. But once he got that 100 against Victoria, he really broke open. He got 100 in the next Shield game. Now he's gone, and as part of his development, has really moved on, and he's been outstanding.
Well, the first test is going to take place at the Gabba a little later on this week. And someone who knows the Gabba very well is Adam Dale, who joins us, former Queensland Australian cricketer. Adam, good morning. Thanks for your time on RSN 927.
Morning, Andrew. Morning, Bros.
Good morning to you, Adam.
Do you think the pink ball will go well up at the Gabba? How do you think that'll swing up there?
Jeez, that's, if you were a bowler, you'd be very happy if they gave
you'd
that
be very
day
happy.
Nighter. A bit of humidity and a little bit in the wicket. It'll be, from a bowler's point of view, it's probably going to replicate the Duke ball more than any other sort of location in Australia. It'll move around, it'll seam, and it'll be a great test for the batsmen, and the bowlers should enjoy it.
So with the bowling lineup, they've added Jai Richardson into there. Peter Siddle's part of that. Do you think this could be an opportunity in exactly what you're saying, and every Australian cricketer knows that it's going to swing round corners up there? Is this maybe a place to play Chad Sayers and with a view to England in the future and see, well, how does he bowl when the ball is moving, and does that add value to our team? I know he doesn't bowl 140, but do we want someone who can swing it?
Yeah, I'd love to see Sayers, and I'd love to see Tremaine. I think, good on the young the guys that have been picked. It's not their fault. The selectors make the decisions, but certainly weight of wickets over the last couple of years, and you know, Tremaine and Sayers have done that. I think, Bryce, it's a really good point. If they're ever going to have a look at a player in conditions that suit, or the term that the selectors love to use over the years is horses for courses, that would be a great one. But you know, the guy Siddle's done well, and he's got an opportunity, and certainly Richardson does also. But I think if they're going to have a look at some batsmen on form, which is what they're doing, with Pattinson and Pekoski, certainly there's some bowlers that I reckon would be at the top of the list on form and wickets, and they'd be disappointed to be not getting that chance.
Melbourne United, we're talking a little bit of basketball before, they're back in action tomorrow at the Australian Open. They're going to play the Illawarra Hawks, which is always a feature over the last couple of years. The open-air game on Boxing Day and also this one at the Australian Open have been two must-go-to fixtures. And joining us on the line is Josh Boone from Melbourne United. Josh, good morning and thanks for your time again on RSN 927.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're well. How have you recovered after the loss on the weekend to Perth, jetting back into Melbourne and straight back into it? Is a short turnaround maybe the best thing at the moment after a loss like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've actually done a little bit better this year with the short turnarounds versus having a full week to kind of prepare for teams. So we're just looking forward to getting back out there. This is kind of crunch time for us. We've got 8 games left here, and there's a lot of teams that are very close on the ladder, so we know that every game counts, and we're just ready to get back out there and ready to get back on our home court.
Yeah, the ladder is absolutely chockers. How do you divide up the next 8 games? Do you look at them one at a time? Do you divide it into fortnights? How do you look at it throughout the next 2 months of basketball?
Nah, it's purely just one game at a time at this point. You know, we need to focus on the Illawarra Hawks first. They're coming in on a little bit of a roll. They've got 2 wins in a row. They just beat Sydney pretty good about a week ago. So, you know, they're going to be hungry. They're desperate for wins. They're a couple of games behind on the ladder. So, you know, they know that if they lose anything, then, you know, that could be their season. So they're going to be a truly desperate team, and we have to play the same way.
Josh, we know the season's really important, but as players, do you have an opportunity with the feature games that Melbourne United put on, like the open-air game and this game at the Australian Open? Do you get a sense to enjoy that and see what's around and know that you're part of something special?
Yeah, you know, obviously once the ball goes up and the tip-off happens, then it's all business, but you know, you still have a little bit of time to kind of just look around and see, you know, and appreciate that not a lot of people get this chance. You know, I've played basketball in, I think I've played for teams in 10 different countries now, and, you know, this is the only place that I've ever played that I got the opportunity to have an experience like this. You know, to play an open-air game, I think the last time I was playing in open-air was probably when I was 14, 15 years old playing outside, so. You know, it's definitely a unique experience, and it's a great environment for basketball.
Now, in terms of the slow start against Perth, can you put that down to anything, or have you worked on that at training, or is it just something you write off and hope that it's a bit quicker tomorrow and you fly out of the blocks?
I wish I could, honestly. It's been a problem for us the last couple of games, honestly. You know, both the Perth game and the Cairns game, we dug ourselves into a hole early. We got down really big in the first quarter and have had to fight our way back in both games. And, you know, we've shown a lot of resiliency and put forth a lot of effort. But the problem with that is that when you get down so much early, you kind of need everything to go right later on. And if one thing goes wrong in a game like that, then, you know, that can kind of be it. So we've made it a little bit harder on ourselves than we've needed to. And but it had happened a couple of times earlier in the season as well, and we seemed to iron it out, but then these last two games we've kind of gone back to it. So that's going to be a real focus for us coming out on Wednesday, is getting off to a really good start.